At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
I can't believe it.
Let's open up that rave line! Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USC is 7-5 again. Oh, no.
Hello. La, la, la. Welcome back to Raina Troy Radio, episode 557. coming to you on Monday, September 9th, looking back at USC's 48-0 win over the Utah State Aggies. I'm your host, Michael Sergio, along with my co-host in the Raina Troy Studio in Los Angeles, Alicia Derritola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
I have no idea what that was.
Do you not get this reference?
No.
You're killing me. You're killing me. Cam in the chat says, I'm bored. Talk to me. La, la, la.
I'm so out of the loop.
It's a great Seinfeld episode.
Okay. It always, you know what? I forgot the first rule of Michael things. It should always assume it's Seinfeld.
I was watching Seinfeld last night while I was casually just winning a national championship in college football 25. And one of the later season episodes, you know, I think they get a bad rap. Season 8 and 9 get a bad rap after Larry David has left. But there's just things that just make me giggle. The episode where Jerry calls his girlfriend and pretends she's the it's me girl. And so he says it's me back to her. And she's thinking that it's like a friend of hers, and she's like, hello? How are things with Jerry? And he's doing this voice. It's so good. It's so good. All right, I'll shut up now.
Yeah.
Anyways, you know, yada, 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 SC got the 48-0 win over Utah State on Saturday night. We're going to talk about more in this episode. But I think I'm going to start where you guys, the Rotbots, start, which is the rave line. What do you think about that? Should we do that?
Of course. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Raina Troy Radio. What's up? This is Dave from Orange County. Jackson in Arizona.
This is Josh from Buckeye Country.
Hi, guys. Trinice from the West Side. But today, I'm bringing back a throwback to Trinice in Orlando.
Thomas from Malibu. Hey, Raina Troy. This is L.A. Fred calling.
Hi, Alicia and Michael. This is Brian in Connecticut. It is 3 a.m., and I don't know when I'm going to be able to go to sleep. I'm so excited. We scored 48 points, and the offense wasn't even the story. Wow.
Well, after the big emotional win versus LSU, I didn't want to fall into the USC is back, baby narrative. Hell, it was week one, and 1 week does not, as we all know, does not a season make. However, after the second game, I think it's safe to say that everything on this team just looks different.
This game was just lights out. figuratively, literally, it was amazing.
And as Alicia famously once said, hot damn, that defense.
Couldn't be any more excited about the moves Lincoln Riley has made in the offseason. They just look and play different.
What a difference a defensive coordinator makes.
It was so awesome to see the defense step up and pitch a shutout.
The most excited I've been about our defense since 50-0 against UCLA.
Handle business, did what we needed to do, pitched a shutout for the first time in God knows when.
And the last time USC shut out an opponent was when the Fighting Lane Kiffin banged out UCLA 50-0, and what a great day that was. So then I started thinking, what else was happening the last time USC had shut out? Well, I'm here to tell you. The Occupy Wall Street protests were happening. Muammar Gaddafi was killed. South Sudan gained its independence. Minecraft was released, friends. Minecraft. Obama came out to tell us that Osama bin Laden had been killed. A whole bunch of the kids on the SEC football program were probably kids, if born. I don't even know. Kim Jong-un died. Remember that? Crazy.
Wow. You know how much fun I had all day? 11 p.m. kickoff. We had to put the bourbon down and pour coffee.
It was so awesome to see all the young guys playing. It was great just to see USC just dominate on a game that they should dominate.
This is awesome for player development and team cohesion.
Of course, it's always good to see some backup players getting in the third quarter. I mean, that just tells you what sort of domination that we had. And, of course, we needed it.
That's the type of complete performance SC fans have been wanting to see, and we got it.
We needed to have that decisive win where nobody on the East Coast is going to be watching this game, so they're just going to look at the box score tomorrow and go, oh, SC won by 40-something? All right, great. It's a shutout. I guess they're pretty good. Let's vote them in the top 10.
What else happened in 2011? Oh, Prince William and Kate Middleton got married, and 2 billion people watched. What a time.
2-0. Defense look fantastic now. 2 weeks straight. They seem to be getting better. If we can just stay healthy, I think we got a great chance of making it to the playoffs at a minimum.
One thing I can't help but be pissed off about, though, is it sure looks like USC and Lincoln Riley wasted our 2 years with Caleb Williams by having Alex Grinch and the god-awful defense we've put up with the past 2 years. I can't help but think what could have been.
Neptune completed its first orbit since it was discovered in 1846. What a year 2011 was.
Awesome game. Fight on.
It's beat Michigan week.
Beat the Wolverines.
Beat the Wolverines.
Enjoy the bye week and fight on, everybody. Keep up the good work. Love your show and fight on.
Fight on.
Fight on, guys.
Fight out.
Thanks for the calls, as always. Of course, the rant line, if you don't call in already, 818-643-7227. Suck It Was Bruin Show. That's the phone number. The phone number's also in the show notes, on our Twitter account, so much more. Call in during the bye week. Call in during the game against Michigan. Call in after. All of those things. Perfect time to call in. And big shout out to our friend Trinice, who not only had some great stuff in the rant line, but she's made the soundboard.
What a difference a defensive coordinator makes.
Yeah. There we go. It's good.
I was just waiting for the fight out on the rant line.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because we will talk more about that.
Yes.
In the mailbag. we got more calls to talk about in the mailbag. Marcelo called in with a chat about fight out. We're going to talk about that later.
Hot take.
We got a really good call from Britt Nervine that I want to get to. So that'll be over in the mailbag as well. Alicia, let's just get into it. Let's talk about SC beating up on Utah State 48-0. We got news.
Oh, yeah, we do have news.
We do have news. We can't get there too quickly.
Do you realize we didn't make predictions last week?
We did.
Did we?
Yeah.
Oh, we did.
You got the number like almost spot on.
Yeah, except for the whole 17 points thing. Okay, yeah. I'm good. We're good.
We're losing it. Let's get to the news, shall we? All right. The news is the AP poll. The AP poll is out. The Trojans are now up to number 11, up 2 spots. Notable rankings, of course, still Georgia number 1, Texas up to number 2, Ohio State 3, Alabama 4, Ole Miss 5. Some other notable USC opponents coming up on the schedule. Penn State at 8, Michigan 17, Notre Dame 18, Nebraska 23. The Oregon Ducks lost a couple of spots down to number 9, but just still two spots ahead of the Trojans. Six of the top seven are all out of that SEC, but four of the top 11 are out of that B1G. Your thoughts?
I can't really argue with the six of the top. What is it? Six of the top seven.
Yeah.
Just because I think that there are more and bigger question marks around the Big Ten teams that are in the range of like Alabama, Ole Miss, Tennessee, you know, Missouri. I don't think there's tons of questions about them. Maybe after USF with Bama, but you know, we know what they are more or less. Where mm-hmm. Penn State, knowing what they are, is not good for Penn State. And Oregon, after their two games, I certainly don't think that they deserve to be up in that top six. And USC is still, you know, it's still too small of a sample size. So I can't really argue with it, but it does great. I just don't like it, but then I think about it and I was like, I don't know. Joel Klatt did go in on the AP voters on his radio show, calling them basically that they just move teams up and down instead of actually evaluating what we've seen, because his argument, and I certainly buy into this, but I am biased, is that if you have watched USC play this year, you know that they are much better than the team that we thought they were going in.
Yeah.
Or that anyone would have thought they were going in, and that they should be ranked accordingly. Because if USC didn't have the off-season assumptions about them, USC would be a top seven team. USC would be ranked ahead of Penn State right now. But all of this doesn't matter because the AP poll doesn't matter in any sense, and the college football playoff rankings aren't going to come out until later on this year. So it's not something to get too grumbly about.
I think a lot of this stuff will just be settled as it goes. I think where I get a little squirmish is, you know, I have a hard time complaining about the AP poll as it is right now, because I think it's mostly right. Like, it's annoying that there's all the SEC schools there, but, like, Oregon was up in that top five, and it's their own fault that they're they're not higher than they are, right? Ole Miss and Missouri, they haven't played anybody.
Yeah.
But neither one of them has allowed a touchdown. Missouri hasn't allowed a single point.
Yeah.
If you do that, you're going to get the benefit of the doubts more than anything else. And Oregon hasn't gotten the benefit of the doubt, and they've slid down a little bit. I think, and then when it comes to Tennessee, you can make an argument that Tennessee, up there with Texas and Georgia, are like the most proven teams in the country right now, just based on who they've beaten. They went on the road, they beat NC State in Charlotte, I think, right? I think it was the neutral site game in Charlotte. 51-10. Like, yeah, that's a really damn good win. Like, how are you gonna say anything against that? I think the other problem that I do have with all those SEC schools is there's a lot of favorable schedules. Because I was going to sit here and say, yeah, but they're all going to play each other. It'll all get settled. Yes, but also these conferences being so big also means that there's a lot of teams that don't play each other.
Yeah.
Like, you look at Missouri's schedule, they get Alabama, but none of the other teams that are in the top 10 Missouri plays.
This is the problem with the SEC teams. It's not just Missouri. You look at all of them. I went through and we saw a thing that was talking about like all of the 10-win teams in the Big Ten and the SEC that they were projecting 10 wins for. And I was like, there's no way everybody can have 10 wins. Yeah. And then I went through the schedule and I mean, it's not going to play out exactly like this. But if every team that's ranked ahead of the team, if rankings governed who wins every game, at least going into the preseason, then yes, you could have like 5-10-2 teams in the SEC, and 5-10-2 teams in the Big Ten as well. So it creates a, we'd spent a lot of time in the offseason talking about like, what's the record that will get you into the playoff, depending on how things shake out in the SEC. you know, that we might see 10-2 teams not in there. So yeah, I don't know.
Georgia's the only one that plays everybody.
Yeah.
Georgia's got sort of the toughest schedule. They go to at Alabama, at Texas, at Ole Miss, and home to Tennessee. They play four top 10 teams. They're also the team that's most likely to win all those games, right?
And that's the reason.
Everybody else plays maybe like one top 10 team, and that's it.
Yeah, I put together for fansided.com the college football playoff like bracket prediction for coming out of week 2, which is way too early, but that's what's fun about it. And I was handing out superlatives. My best bet to make the playoff is not Georgia because of their schedule. Like, I think Georgia's going to win most of those games, but things can go wrong more easily for them than pretty much anybody else.
Sure.
My lock was Utah, just because I don't think that if Cam Rising is healthy, I think Utah's going to roll.
Which is the myth. We'll see how his health goes. Kenny in the chat says SC now has the 8th highest odds to make the playoff, according to FPI, about 43%. And yeah, we talk about, you know, a lot of those SEC teams have favorable schedules, not going to play other high ranking teams. SC schedule at one point looked like SC might play what, like 3 or 4 top 10 teams. As it stands now, the only team that is on the brink of the top 10 is SC themselves. Michigan at 17, Notre Dame at 18. They already beat LSU, who is 16, 16, 17, 18, right there, bang, bang, bang. And then Nebraska at 23. So the schedule is starting to look better for SC there. But of course, let's talk about week 2, where the Trojans faced their easiest opponent of the season, so it is what it is, in Utah State. But the Trojans entered the game as, what was it, 28-point favorites or whatever it was the last time that we spoke? 28.5 when we did the preview. And they won by 48-0. Alicia, you have gone through your rewatch. What are your thoughts after looking back at SC's win over the Aggies?
Okay, I have 4 big talking points. I'm going to try and get through them quickly.
Okay.
The first drive that Utah State had, you asked me in the CarCast when I felt like the shutout was possible.
Yeah.
And I said probably in the 3rd quarter. I don't remember.
Yeah.
I can tell you on that first drive that USC played against Utah State, I had like trauma, fear, like you know, like an abused dog where they're adopted and then you go to pet them and they just shrink away whenever they see the hand and it's really sad and you just don't like to think about it. Like, that was me on that first drive, because there were 2 plays. There was a little swing pass to wide receiver that he just sort of shimmied around Eric Gentry and got a big chunk of yards, got probably like 8 yards, and Eric Gentry was sort of just not able to take the correct angle to make that play. And then on the very next play, the running back ripped off a chunk because there was a loss of contain on the edge by Anthony Lucas. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking to myself, like, oh no, it was all a dream. It was all just that. And then the next 3 plays are a stuff, basically Bryson Barnes having nowhere to go, and then an all-out blitz that there was pressure and a little check down that that Easton Mascarenhas Arnold snuffed out real easy. So from that point on, it was all go for USC's defense. I want to bring up Anthony Lucas, because outside of that play where he lost contain, and then Shock and Spratling did a really good job on Twitter of pointing out how the difference later, a play later, the difference between when he lost the edge and when he attacked the tackle and kept the edge and set up a stuff, that was the big difference in it for the defense on those running plays. Anthony Lucas, I don't understand how quarterback hurries are calculated.
Mm-hmm.
Because according to Stat Broadcast, the only player on USC's team that got a QB hurry was Jamil Muhammad. I can tell you in my rundown sheet, I was writing down six hurries, six forces of throws, like over and over and over and over again. Anthony Lucas was everywhere in this game. He was all over Bryson Barnes, making life miserable for Bryson Barnes, knocking him down, forcing him into bad throws. Like, this was a great game from Anthony Lucas, and the stat sheet does not represent that in the slightest. And I kind of low-key feel bad for him. He finishes with one tackle and a breakup. Like, the dude played stellar. So, you know, helmet sticker to him. Another helmet sticker to John Humphrey, who, by the way, I don't know if I should reveal this, but I didn't clock that Jalen Smith didn't play in that game until I was watching the game again this morning. I didn't notice that number two was never on the field. He was out injured.
Yeah.
And
Jalen Smith and Mason Cobb.
And Mason Cobb.
Argue are two of the best players on the team. Important players on defense, right?
Yes. So they got a shutout without two of their best players on defense. And I am going to credit the reason I didn't notice Jalen Smith out there. I'm going to credit John Humphrey and the other corners for being so good that I didn't even recognize that Jalen Smith wasn't ever out there. John Humphrey getting the start because Smith was injured was making great tackles. He was shedding blocks on the outside and blowing up wide receiver screens. He was doing a ton of things right, and it just goes to show the depth that USC has in that secondary is pretty absurd, that they can be doing essentially line changes in the secondary, and I don't think the level drops there in the slightest. So that's freaking awesome. And then the pièce de résistance, the number one thing I want to draw from my rewatch. USC's tight ends.
He makes me drool.
Are the most important players on the field.
He makes me drool.
Lake McCree and Cade Eldridge, outside of that one, the fumble, Lake McCree's fumble, were absolutely outstanding. Every single run play that worked, the tight end was springing it. And I mean every single one. And McCree, he's all over my notes, you know, 87 block, 87 block, 87 block, 88 block is out there. When Walker Lyons came in, 85 block, 85 block. Like, there was one play where Cade Eldridge missed a block and the play got blown up. And it was like, that was like the one time that the running back got blown up. And it was because that's what, you know, Cade Eldridge missed the block. So those tight ends, outside of just being essential from a receiving perspective, I cannot emphasize enough how critical those tight ends are to every aspect of USC's offense. Every single one, they are completely, completely essential and critical. And you know, when you look at what's going to come up with Michigan and their defense, it's certainly going to get a lot harder. But the tight ends, if they can continue to build off of this performance, and this performance is exhibit A of how this offense can run if those tight ends are doing their job, and boy, were they doing their job every single play in and out. There was a point where I decided that Lake McCree is Rhett Ellison reborn. and I want to like point that out as a thing, because Rhett Ellison was the unsung hero of that 2011 offense. He was what made the offense go. And the big difference for me between 2011 and 2012 was that Rhett Ellison wasn't on the field making the plays that USC needed in all facets of the game.
Yeah.
And it was funny because they had Lake McCree doing that Rhett Ellison, like, fullback role.
The H-back thing.
Yeah, they were doing the H-back thing a ton with Rhett Ellison. and they were doing two tight end sets with Red Ellison in the backfield, and then Cade Eldridge up on the line, and pulling both of them, and having, you know, McCree as a lead blocker, sealing off an edge defender, and then Cade Eldridge pulling and going, and again they were, it was like they were parting of the blue sea of the white sea blue white sea of Utah State defenders. And obviously it's not going to be as easy against, you know, Big Ten offensive defensive fronts and Big Ten athletes for sure, but this is I cannot stress enough how beautiful this game was, watching the tight ends block, specifically because when I was still running Reign of Troy and I had more time to devote specifically to doing RainofTroy.com, yeah. And when I could spend my entire Sunday rewatching the game and recording a rewatch podcast where I went like play by play about what happened, I cannot tell you how often I had to go, you know, tight end missed the block, and tight end missed the block, and tight end missed the block, tight end missed the block. It was like constant. And this time it was constant. It's just like tight end hit the block, tight end hit the block, tight end hit the block. That's why the play worked, because the tight end hit the block. And I just can't tell you how gratifying that is. Everyone asked, when will USC use the tight end? They're using the tight end, and in ways you don't even see on first watch.
Yeah, it's awesome. And that RPO play to the tight end is so good.
Mm-hmm.
They did use that a fair bit last year. I feel like a lot of Lake McCree's catches were on that RPO. Yeah. But that's not the only way he's being used. And, you know, he gives you that extra wrinkle. And I think that you mentioned Red Ellison as sort of the H-back. And I think it's interesting because that's how SC has used tight ends really since since Lane Kiffin sort of made that move for him in 2011. Because when you look at the guys who came after, like Eric Krummenhoek, right? Like Eric Krummenhoek, when SC was in the pistol offense, running the gumbo and all that stuff, right? Like, they were using the tight ends essentially as fullbacks, but it was in this very predictable way that wasn't actually, you know, benefiting everybody else. It wasn't benefiting the tight ends, wasn't necessarily always benefiting the run game. They weren't playing a big role in the pass game and all that stuff. And if they can get them involved in totality, it definitely absolutely helps, doesn't it?
Yeah, but I think it's not just how they want to get them involved. It's what you actually see when they're out there doing it. Because I think there have been many times, like you said, where USC wanted to have the tight ends involved in the blocking game, and they were liabilities a lot of times when you would ask them to block. And both of these guys, Eldridge, I'm especially impressed with because he's so young. Mm-hmm. But Eldridge and Red Ellison and Walker Lyons, all of them, the thing I think you got to love about them, this is the thing they talk about always with offensive linemen, is that, like, in order to be an offensive, well, this is a lot of things. In order to be a good defender, you have to love to hit. And in order to be an offensive lineman, you have to love to just, like, dominate somebody on the other side. Like, blocking has to be something you enjoy as opposed to something you just do because it's your job. Like, the thing that USC has instilled in this team, I think, across the board, and this is the physicality that people talk about, I think, is it is very, very clear that blocking is not the, well, I guess I have to if I want to get my catches mentality from these tight ends. They enjoy the blocking. They take pride in the blocking, and they are aggressive and forceful, and they get the job done. And that's something I've got to credit the wide receivers, because many of USC's screens, that USC is able to run the screens that they run because USC's wide receivers also are willing blockers, and they don't treat it like it's like a secondary skill that they have to have. Like they go out there and they all contribute in that way, and it's a very sort of team effort. But the blocking is the biggest difference I've seen on this team by far. In the past couple of years.
Yeah.
And this team in particular, and I think it helps the size gain that guys have done, but going up against a more physical defense in practice, I think these guys look like they look like they are.
Yeah, Robin Murdy in the chat says he was Miller Moss blocked. Yeah, he was throwing blocks out there down the sideline. I really like how the receivers are blocking too. Mm-hmm. I put on Twitter during the game that Kyron Hudson looks like he went to the Darius Rogers School of Blocking, because you look back at 2016, 2015, Darius Rogers and Juju Smith-Schuster were so good at blocking on the perimeter, it allowed the screens to be very viable, right? Like, even remember 2014, Nelson Aguilar, so many of his yards were off the screen. And they were so successful in running those screens, right? We talked about how the Steve Sarkisian screens were very good. Even the Tyson Helton screens were good. And so much of it came from the blocking at receiver. And then that really has gone away back when the air raid came in with Graham Harrell. And then even with Lincoln Riley, I think the screens have been good, but not necessarily great, because the blocking hasn't always been there. And this year, I think so far, the blocking outside looks fantastic. I think if the receiver's able to block, even if they're not, you know, always a threat on a single play to catch the ball, if they're laying guys out to, you know, create running lanes, that's enormous.
Yeah, Jacoby Lane had a really nice day blocking as well, just to highlight.
Yeah, yeah.
But again, the size and going against a more physical defense on the other side helps that.
Yeah, for sure. Let's get into stats with Michael, which I feel like I need a drop for
this. We need a little, like, it's time for stats with Michael. There you go.
I don't know. We'll figure something out. All right. So you mentioned the first drive of the game. I agree. You watched those first couple of plays. There was a little, maybe. But that first drive, Utah State had 29 yards. That was the longest drive of the game for Utah State until the very last drive of the game, when they got into the red zone briefly and then immediately went backwards to kick the field goal that went wide and ultimately seal the shutout. That last drive, 40 yards. The first drive of the game, 29 yards. Utah State only had 3 drives of more than 20 yards in the whole game. 0 more than 40 yards. What does that mean? I looked it up from last year. Even the better games that SC had defensively, San Jose State, Nevada, ASU, UCLA, all of those teams had at least 4. Washington had 8 drives of 40-plus yards. Colorado had 7. Cal had 7. Arizona had 6. Utah State, 0. 0. We heard in the rant line, Trudy so eloquently said that it was the first shutout since 2011. It was the first red zone shutout since 2019 against Arizona. The fewest yards allowed, 190, since 2014 against Oregon State. The fewest passing yards, 103, since 2018 against Cal, the infamous Toa Lobendon snap game. The fewest first downs USC has allowed, 10, since 2016 at UCLA. That was back when Falafel was their quarterback, remember?
Yes.
Yeah. The fewest third down conversions allowed. Utah State had 2. It's the fewest since 2021 at Colorado, which I have to say, I feel like I have an encyclopedic knowledge of SC football for the most part. I cannot remember that game at all. I can't even picture it. 2021 at Colorado. I got nothing. Nothing. No memory at all. Couldn't tell you what happened. SC won because SC has never lost to Colorado, but could not tell you anything in that game. Fewest penalty yards, 27. SC only had 27 penalty yards, the fewest since the 2019 Holiday Bowl against Iowa. And the 249 rushing yards of the Trojans had were the most since 2018 at Oregon State. The 5 rushing touchdowns USC had tied for the most since that 2017 Western Michigan game, when Stephen Carr just went off on his debut. And through 2 games, These are maybe the craziest stats I've ever heard. SC has allowed one rushing yard, one, on third and fourth down combined. 1 yard. 1 yard. It's two on first, on third down, and negative one on fourth down. 1 yard. SC has not given up a third down conversion on third and seven plus.
Hallelujah.
Last year, even like, you know, you go back to the Clancy Pendergast days. How many times?
It's been the bane of everyone's...
Third and 14, and Stanford's throwing to some other tight end you've never heard of, and then all of a sudden they become a household name on third and 14.
USC love to get in third and long situations, yeah, and then just Cordero give up everything.
Cordero last year, those runs that he would have on third and 22?
Running, passing, everything. It's just...
Yeah. Zero. That's on third and seven plus.
That's truly, you can credit the tackling, mm-hmm, the discipline,
yeah,
the play calling defensively.
I love the third down play calling.
Yeah,
they really disguise everything that they want to put out there. They go in so many different looks, change up their shells, all that kind of stuff. And yeah, a lot of times they will bring heat on third down. They'll play a little soft in the coverage, but not soft in a way that gives up the third down. Soft in the way that, like, soft is supposed to be, which is take away the big play, force you to be underneath to try to get something underneath, and then tackle them then short of the sticks.
Up. Yeah, what you works. You invite them to throw short,
yeah,
and then you prevent the conversion because, yeah, you're ready to tackle them short. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like Novocaine. And Novocaine, give it time, it works.
And there's just so much variety, because I think that was what was messing up Utah State, is like,
yeah,
they would show blitz and then come out of it. Mm-hmm. Show blitz and then blitz. And you know, just so many different looks. It's very tough for like non-cerebral quarterbacks to an offensive
even
line.
Even the cerebral
to,
ones. Yeah.
I mean, even the cerebral ones. But like,
you blitz all night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Last thing to mention, we've talked about it before. If only SC had a top 50 defense, right? We've said if SC has a top 5, top 10 offense with the top 50 defense, just top 50, top 40, like they don't need to be great. They just need to be decent. SC would be really good. Well, I went over to see the rankings in FEI, and Alicia, the Trojans are already
the pride of FEI.
Defensively, the Trojans are number 45 in FEI. 45, you're like, okay, that's not great. That includes 67% of a preseason projection.
Yep.
The Trojans were 80th last year in FEI, and 80th, you know, sounds good to me last year where they, you know, where they were in so many of the other ranks.
How they felt.
But I think it's because FEI is so opponent adjusted. And when you look at the teams that SC played last year, Washington with Penix, Oregon with Nix, all those guys, I think it made it a little bit, it gave SC sort of the benefit of the doubt for giving up 52 points to Washington a little bit. And that's why they were 80th instead of 120th or whatever. But still, 45th now. 45th.
Rising up.
Yeah, and it's only going to get better when the mm-hmm. when the preseason projections start to drop off even further. Those really start to like halve every week. It'll halve. I hate that word. It'll halve.
Yeah.
Half. It'll, you know what I mean. Anyways, we'll have to keep an eye on that sort of thing going forward. Alicia, one of the things that we like to do is to look at the over-under, and I need you to stall for a second, because I didn't pull up the graphics.
Oh, no. Okay.
The horror.
I can talk more about the tight ends.
Do it. Yeah.
All right, let's go through my notes. Woody Marks and Quentin Joyner, I just love how patient they run. I think those guys, and basically every running back under the current staff under Kyle McDonald, just have such a good sense of where to go and when to take off and when to hold and be patient and find the gap.
Yeah,
I just love the way both of them run. Very nice to see.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we've got the over-under stuff. Let's get to it. SC's over-under, Rana Troy's over-under in the Utah State game.
So you're going over.
I'm feeling bold. Give me that over.
I'll go under. I got to take an under here. I got three unders to take.
I'm going
to
do an under here.
All right, your first over-under of the week was 189.5 USC rushing yards. I took the over. It was over. It was
by a lot.
Sort of way over 249.
Yeah.
Yeah. Big over win for me there.
I'll take. I mean, I enjoyed the rushing, so.
Sure. Yeah. Next one. My first over under was 2.5 sacks for the Trojans. You took the over, and boy, was it just 3. SC had 3 sacks.
If I had lost this and then did the rewatch that I did, I would have been furious, because the only reason it wasn't more is because Bryson Barnes is really good at throwing the ball away when he's in mid sack.
Yeah, yeah, they were in his face all the time. Like you said earlier, like SC was hurrying him all the time. They might not have been tabulated as hurries, but they were definitely in his face. Your next over under was 5.5 tight end catches. We don't need to go into this, really. I took the under stupidly. It was way over an 8.
You love to see it.
Yeah, way, way, way over. My second over under was 0.5 one-handed USC catches. You took the under. We're listing this as an under.
I certainly didn't see any.
I didn't see
but
any.
But I saw many attempts.
There were a couple of attempts.
Every single one of the of those high passes into the back of the end zone with Jacoby Lane and Deuce Robinson were almost one-handed grabs.
Yeah.
So
Miller Moss holding down L1 while he makes those throws.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nearly on the first drive, too. On the first drive, if the one-handed catch would have hit the Deuce Robinson in the end zone, that would have been incredible. But alas, did not happen. Lastly, your over-under of Utah State runs of 10+. It was at 4.5. I took the under. I didn't feel good about this one. It didn't matter. Paid off. It was 4. It was exactly 4. So the line was really good, but it was just 4. 2 of those 4s came in the last drive of the game.
Yeah. Yeah. The run game definitely didn't pop, but it was probably those run pops were their best plays of the night.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Their last drive was their last drive and their first drive were their two best drives, because they were the ones where they were able to get some gains. Last over under of the day, I said over under 2.5 Jaden Mayava drives. You took the under. Should have taken the over. It was over. It was 3. It was 3. It was almost 4, but Jake Jensen got the knee at the end.
Yeah, yeah. We incorrectly had a discussion on the CarCast about... we totally forgot about that 3 and out that happened when Mayava was in, but...
Who remembers that? Yeah.
Yeah. I just... It was a joy watching Mayava again.
He looks really good.
It was a joy watching Mayava, but it was also great doing the rewatch and, like, reaffirming why Miller Moss is the guy.
Yeah.
Because Miller Moss is the guy, guys. Like, he is pure, calm, collected. He's accuracy.
Yeah.
Like, again, we don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but, like, the Drew Brees comparisons are comparing.
Yeah. Yeah. Just... If only he could wear the Drew Brees helmet and get out of that Vices. I would appreciate that. Get out of the Vices 02, please. All right. Weekly scoreboard yet again. Cats game, 3-3. It's what we do all the time.
Hey, we're competitive. Let's
6-6 for the season. But what did you guys do, huh? We had a bunch of people go 6-0. Jensen SC 11. I think that's Jake Jensen himself. Like, literally went 6-0. HHNHB, Pickle, Big Poppy 55, and Noah in Las Vegas. Congratulations. Well, you all went 6-0. Your prize is for us to say good job. Good job.
A round of applause. Yeah. Good job.
The season leaders so far, Jensen SC 11, Scotty C, and Pickle. All 10-2 so far this season. That's it for over under. Alicia, let's get to our game predictions. Your prediction for the SC Utah State game was 48-17. I said 47-13. You hit right on the money. On the SC side of it.
Yeah.
Not the Utah State side of it, but the SC side of it. 48-0 was the final score.
And the reason I did 17, it's not that I didn't have faith that the defense would be good. It's just you always assume they're going to clear the benches if you're up big. And
yeah.
Usually when you put your third team in, they give up a couple touchdowns on the last two drives of the game that the opponent has. It happens. Especially with the running back that they had and the quarterback that they had. Could do something. But all credit to the backups. Like the backups play hard. They played hard. They did well. I mean, obviously they didn't do as well.
Yeah.
But it was very nice to see the same mentality, the same tackling level again. There really wasn't a huge drop off.
Yeah. I think it was great to see the starters rooting those guys on too. Like everybody was sort of fired up on the sideline.
Well, and we got to mention Cam Fountain, because Cam Fountain made the cameo of the day, freshman cameo of the day, because when he came in for that final drive, he was all over the place making plays. That kid is something to be excited about.
For USC Fountains, where's Cam rank compared to like the finger?
I think the finger fountain ranks ahead of Cam for now, but Cam definitely has the opportunity to outdo the finger fountain. Does the finger fountain still exist?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
People are like, what's that finger fountain like? Yeah. All right, let's get to the mailbag show.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever, and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of 5-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
You've got mail.
All right, let's start with a YouTube comment that we got from Iron Trojan 32. Guys, there's no 5-star reviews because you guys have the show on YouTube and do such a fantastic job here. We forget about the non-video version. Much better seeing your beautiful faces, but Reign of Troy gets 5 stars from this dude for sure. Fight on. P.S. I used to play at Lumina Park growing up. Haven't been there in many years since moving out to the East Coast, though. Look at that.
Oh, Lumina
Kid. The Lumetians are everywhere, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah. We appreciate it. We appreciate the five-star review, the pseudo five-star review,
yes,
of sorts. I do think it's funny that we were talking about this off air before we started tonight. The balance between YouTube and audio or video, not whatever you want to call it. Yeah. When it comes to a Fallout episode or a game preview episode or basically any episode that's not a CarCast, more people download it. When it comes to the CarCast episodes, more people watch them on YouTube. It's weird.
Because they want that instant discussion. When you're when you're sort of high on the performance, you want to bask in it. I get that.
Yeah, absolutely. We did get a real genuine five-star review from JB Class 8082. Defense, 5 stars. Great job as always. Last season, SC only had 2 games where they allowed 20 points or less. Nevada, 14, and Stanford, 10. Thank you for that little nugget there, JB 8082. And the 5-star review. Cheers.
Cheers. Yes, much appreciated. Thank you. And that's, again, it's always great to point out that, like, I know it's Utah State, but we can still be excited about the performance of that defense.
SC hasn't shut anybody out in 13 years.
Yeah.
That's a long time. Yeah. Andrew sent us an email. Don't ever come for Alicia and Michael again, and I will destroy you. Also, I don't agree with talking about suffering during the Helton era. It had tons of fun times. Alicia angry in CarCast, strangers walking towards your car in McDonald's parking lots mid-episode, hilarious meltdowns and rant line montages, and 20-minute arguments on the types of hangers in your closet. Do they all match now? Andrew in Madrid, formerly of Lisbon, Ciudad de Mexico, and NYC.
The most important question there is about the hangers, and the hangers on my side of the closet do not match. The hangers on Michael's side of the closet, I believe they are all the same one.
Yeah, they have to be the same. They have to. Well, it's one of the luxuries when you're an adult. You can buy the hangers you want.
See, I've got 3 different kinds of hangers. I've got ones that are sort of felt or whatever that material is, so things don't fall off of them.
Sure.
And then the sort of more sturdy, like standard plastic hanger, but I think I have some in black and some in white. So
that'll all be the same. I'm basically on the spectrum, so I have to, like, you know, I have to be true to form.
Well, what's funny is I bought a ton of hangers because I decided that I was going to stop folding clothes and I was just going to hang them up to deal with my undiagnosed ADHD issues. And then I realized that I won't hang clothes up. So now I'm doing the basket method where I just have baskets on the floor and I just throw my clothes in there and just live with wrinkles. And it's been the best I've done so far.
We're barely adults.
Pay no attention to the baskets, unsorted baskets on the floor that still need to have that happening.
Email from Tony. Michael, Alicia, this is Tony from the Nora, PA. We saw tonight as a team was a team that won the big game the week before and then faces an inferior team the next week and just dominates them. There's a beautiful thing to see. Fight on. You know what it reminds me of a little bit? I always think of SC against ASU 2004. The week after the Cal game, SC won that game. Was it 45-0 or 45-7? Something like that. A game in which SC just murdered him. Just like it was the game was bigger than the score indicated because it was like the Cal game was past them. The emotional, like, victory was past them, and now they were gonna be fueled on it for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
And like that's what you saw on Saturday night against Utah State. Like, it would have been very easy to have a letdown, especially on short rest, especially the same day that all the teams ended up losing or playing poorly. But SC was like, nah, we're going to use the LSU game to fuel the Trojans going forward. And it worked. Alicia, we got a long email from Tom. You want to read it?
Yeah. Hi, Michael and Alicia. First off, I want to say if Danton Lynn keeps doing what he's doing on defense, triple his pay and hope he stays for at least another year. But all the talk of Lynn and Riley's ability to coach the defense and quarterbacks respectively got me thinking. I'm currently reading the book Range, which, if you're not familiar with the premise, is about how generalists do well in a world of specialization because the variety of experience they've received helped them apply their knowledge to disparate concepts. More importantly, they've learned how to think rather than simply apply the same solution to a problem that might look similar on the surface, but in reality requires many different answers and adjustments. Ergo, when you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. I would argue that both coaches seem to excel in their areas of expertise because of this. While Riley is, of course, a great offensive coordinator, at this stage no one can doubt what he's able to do with a wide variety of quarterbacks, whereas other coaches need a certain type. Riley seems to have the ability to adjust his coaching style and play calling to set his quarterback and the offense up for success. Meanwhile, I think what Lynn is doing this year, in contrast to last year, is even more stark because his personnel is very different from what from that great UCLA defense. It shows me he is able to look holistically at the pieces he has and adapt his scheme to put his players in the best position to succeed. Sorry for the long email, but all of this is basically to say that Riley being forced to go all in on good coaching rather than being able to rely on buying the best players seems to be resulting in a staff that truly and fundamentally understand the game and how best to use the still well above average talent at USC. This was the first year Riley really faced adversity, and I think it's a great sign that he seems to be learning from his mistakes and adapting. And he's only 40, barely a man, as per Mike Gundy. I could be reading into this way too much, and USC could still fall flat on their faces, but while I'm not confident in specific wins and losses, I feel more confident that this team will be passing the eye test this year. Thanks, Tom, from the Cayman Islands. That's an outstanding email.
Yeah. I really liked this when we got this. We got this late last week before the Utah State game. I love the premise as sort of a thought experiment. Kind of like the reverse engineering of it based on sort of the differences in the personnel and what that means. I think there is a little bit slightly maybe overthinking, sure, but this is what we do with sports, right? Like yeah. we try to find relationships between things, and yeah, I think it is a testament to Lincoln Riley that one of the things that makes him very good is that he not only has repeated success with quarterbacks, but I think that there are similarities, sure, between a lot of the quarterbacks that he's had success with, but like it's not really a one for one. Kyler Murray and Jalen Hurts were more runners than Baker Mayfield and Caleb Williams, who were capable runners, but they weren't running quarterbacks who were looking to run first more mm-hmm. than anything else. And you look at Miller Moss is probably the biggest statue of all of those guys, but that doesn't mean that the offense still can't be tailored to him. And when it comes to Danton Lynn, I think that one of the things that Danton Lynn has, you know, going his way is that he was in a Baltimore defensive system, which is basically the same thing as sort of like the Bill Walsh tree, but for defense.
Yeah.
Where, you know, everybody who's come off of that system has been a success kind of thing. And, you know, even going back to like, you know, 20 years, Jack Del Rio was a guy who was in that system and won a Super Bowl with them and then ultimately had a successful career. Different regime, obviously, but like that's just, it's been a sort of a pipeline. The Ravens can sort of pipe those guys out, and being able to sort of adapt and have the hallmarks of what you saw in Baltimore, but use the experience that he had at UCLA and then adapt it to everyone now, I think that does show the testament to not just being a guy who runs a particular system, because I think that was the knock on Mike Leach.
Mm-hmm.
And I think running a rigid system is ultimately where I think, you know, I think, you know, going back to Tom's email when he talks about like it's important to not apply the same solution on everything. And one of the reasons that Nick Saban was able to continue to win was because he completely changed all of his identities over the course of his Alabama tenure, right? Like
mm-hmm.
where they started was way different from where they ended. And then you look at the guys who haven't adapted.
Dabo
not adapted, right? David Shaw
didn't adapt.
Yeah. And it hurt him, right? Mm-hmm. And you look at Mike Leach, I think Mike Leach is someone who could have a lot of success, but like, he was ultimately limited because of his lack of adaptability, because of his comfort zone. And I think that when you look at what Lincoln Riley does, Lincoln Riley's in a perfect little sweet spot offensively, because there's all the elements of the Mike Leach, Hal Mumme offense, air raid concepts and all that stuff, but it's still tied in with everything else. There's power spread elements and all this other stuff, and it's like, it's evolved. It's not just a, you know, one note kind of thing. And I think that, you know, Lincoln Riley's ability to adapt and go out and get Nathan Lynn defensively too, just, you know, speaks volumes. And last thing, because I know I'm long-winded here, the Solid Verbal was talking about this, and we were talking to our friend Kenny about it, and he mentioned that, like, what the Solid Verbal was saying, that, like, things are true until they're not, right? Lincoln Riley, yeah, didn't value defense until he did. And you're allowed, people are allowed to evolve, and when they do evolve, you need to recognize that they have, right? Like, once you start to evolve, that changes things.
Kirby Smart couldn't get over the hump until he did. You know, there's a million of these stories of guys who do that.
Jim Harbaugh?
Yeah, Jim Harbaugh needed to evolve and get to the point where he could have the right team at the right time with the right schemes and the right systems and the right coaches and all of that. You do need that to happen.
Yeah.
But I do agree with the praise of Danton Lynn, especially because we spent a large portion of this offseason talking about how, well, what is this defense going to look like without a Jay Toya in the center?
Right.
Because he was very critical to the way that they played. And what is it going to look like without an NFL-level defensive end in Leiatu Latu and the Murphy twins and those guys that were very critical to making things go? And, you know, ideally when you're recruiting or you're doing the transfer portal, you can find the guys that fit you, what you did before. But if you don't, then you have to work with what's there. And I think that what we've seen is Danton Lynn using the personnel that is at his disposal and trying to get the most out of them, instead of having them get the most out of his scheme. I was listening to the Peristyle podcast. They were talking about like Eric Gentry and how the way that he's playing now in this scheme with these coaches sort of exposes the misplay of him over the last 2 years, because I think the previous coaching staff looked at him and thought he's not a traditional linebacker, so he's not necessarily going to work in what we want to do. And it's clear that Danton Lynn has looked at him and said, this is just a playmaker. This is a guy that will mm-hmm. make plays, and I'm going to go out there and let him put him in positions to make plays. And that's why USC is having success here. Aside from, you know, obviously tackling better and positioning guys better and play calling defensively better and instilling better physicality and bulking up weight wise, like all aside from all of those things, I think Danton Lynn has shown an immense degree of, like Riley, the tactical understanding of what he has, what he doesn't have, and what will work for him.
Yeah, and you mentioned what would the defense look like without Jay Toya. I think you're forgetting that Jay Toya translated to Wyomingite is Gavin Meyer. So
Gavin Meyer though is Jay Toya minus like 25 pounds though. So
sure.
And that's not a slight on Gavin Meyer, but like Jay Toya is a load. Yeah. And having that kind of nose tackle available to you does change what you can do defensively. But you don't have to have a 330-pound nose tackle to be successful.
Let's go to a voicemail we got from Britt in Irvine.
This is Britt from Irvine. Another great game last night. Let me offer up a hearty woo-hoo for the montage. I know that, you know, going back to the Holiday Bowl, every USC fan had their favorite person to acknowledge as far as coach or player or administrator and all that. And yeah, I don't think any of the obvious choices are wrong. But for those of us who actually go to the games at the Coliseum, I would like to nominate someone who's probably been overlooked up until now and deserves all the accolades, and that is DJ Malski, the stadium disc jockey. He finally retired YMCA from the beginning of the fourth quarter, which was always annoying and didn't fit, and replaced it with Lose Yourself by Eminem, which for those of you who went in the Pete Carroll era, that was the walkout song for the team. So, yeah, it's great to have defense and great to have tackling and just Trojan football back, but it's also great to leave the Village People, and no hate against the Village People, but YMCA is not a USC song, and it's great to get back to Lose Yourself. Fight on, beat the bye.
Thanks, Brett. We'll try to beat the bye as best as we can. First of all, you ever think, like, the Village People could not exist today, right? Like not only, like, no. Obviously you couldn't have someone dressed up as a Native American, like, even besides that obvious point, even think about how corny the Village People are. Like, the cop and the,
Camp is in, though, so maybe not for you, but camp is certainly in.
It's weird.
A lot of areas, but the thing I take from all of this is that Lose Yourself is a much superior song to play in that moment, and I'm glad that Lose Yourself has a place at the Coliseum again.
I thought it was interesting. I saw a ton of tweets to DJ Malski about, you know, don't play YMCA.
Oh, there
YMCA.
Was a whole campaign on Twitter.
Yes. But I thought it was interesting for two things. One, I thought everyone hated DJ Malski. Apparently not. I think there were a lot of tweets that I saw of people like, I love everything you do, just don't play YMCA. Yeah. And he was responding to a lot of them and was like, sorry, I have to play it. Like, it's not my choice, blah, blah, blah. Which I think is a testament to SC wanting, whoever runs the game entertainment stuff, like, I think they want to have the college football thing. You know, Auburn started with Sweet Caroline. The Red Sox took Sweet Caroline and made it their thing that they stole from Auburn. And then, you know, Oregon plays Twist and Shouts, and Wisconsin plays Jump Around. Like, everybody, the Michigan plays the song from The Killers. Like, everybody has a thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I get it. I totally understand wanting to have that thing. But YMCA being that thing is just, it's not the mood. Like, I think that there are campy songs that you can pick. And I think, like, campy or,
if
like,
old classic.
If the crowd
responds to them, then that works. If the crowd's not responding to them, they don't. If you put Living on a Prayer up on that, the crowd, at least when I was in the student section, everyone went crazy for it. Everyone sang along. So, like, there are songs you can do. It's just maybe not why. Maybe YMCA has lost.
YMCA is a baseball song. Lost the juice. You play it in the middle of a pitching change in the eighth inning.
Yeah.
That's when you play YMCA. I don't think it works. I think bringing back Lose Yourself is great. When Reggie takes the field, Lose Yourself better be the song that he takes the field to. Discord message from Samuel in South Carolina. I was explaining to a friend who isn't a USC fan the story of the 55 jersey. He suggested that SC retire that number, but give it out ceremonially to a linebacker on their last game as the Trojan, not necessarily every year, but to a guy who's earned it, like a Cam Smith type of guy, long-term starter, fan favorite, etc. Wanted to know what you guys thought of the idea. Is it better than keeping it in limbo or no?
It's certainly better than keeping it in limbo. This is my general take on all of this, is that either retire the 55 and put it up with the other numbers, or put it back in circulation somehow, some way. I don't necessarily care how they decide to do it. I just want it to not just be a number that is just quasi-retired, but then, you know, what a theoretically could come back. I don't know. This isn't necessarily my favorite way to do it, because my favorite way to do it would just be, and this is the problem. This is the problem. They've lost the recruiting juice of that 55 by not giving it out, because I was going to say, use it as a recruiting tool. Well, no one gives a crap anymore. These kids don't have, these kids were not alive or conscious when anybody at USC was wearing 55. So you've ruined that. I think that you that there's probably an in between where you reward it to a senior or a veteran to avoid the problem that people had, which was the Lamar Dawson problem,
which was ridiculous. Was that
he had it and he wasn't great and he had it for a long time and then people decided that we weren't going to give it out again. To avoid that, give it to an upperclassman. So theoretically, you're capping their usage of it for, you know, a year or two, and use it as a reward for good play. But use it is the point. Give it to somebody.
Yeah, Michigan gives out the 98 or whatever to has a special merit. I think, doesn't Notre Dame give out a single digit?
Notre Dame does single digits, like they change each week too.
Okay,
which I don't like.
That's annoying. But like, I think yes, you can give it out for a season and be like, okay, this is the guy. This season, SC is going to give it to Easton Masqueraders Arnold, right? Yeah. Or whatever it is. I think that would be a good thing to just do. What nothing pisses me off more than not putting it in circulation. I understand this idea of like, oh, we don't want to, you know, bring shame or whatever to the Junior Seau name. And since he passed away, it's... all the number 55s don't want to give it out anymore. And it's like, you're forgetting that he gave it to Willie McGinnis before Willie McGinnis even played a game.
Yeah.
And Willie McGinnis continued to be good, which made it a thing, which continued to go down the line. Which he gave it to another
freshman. Like,
yeah, and then it was Claiborne, and then Steele, and then Rivers, and then, like, all these dudes. Like,
yeah,
they all wore it before they were truly somebody. That is kind of the thing. Yeah, there's going to be dudes who you don't remember as number 55. That's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay. They don't all need to be All-Americans.
Mm-hmm.
The key is to, like, you know, let the thing live.
Or just retire it. Like, I'm perfectly fine. Like, if they want to retire 55, go right ahead.
Yeah.
But at least do Junior Seau the honor of retiring it and putting his number up there where it should be if it is indeed retired.
Right
now, it's just a number that doesn't no longer exists at USC. Yeah. It's nowhere in the stadium.
Yeah.
So what's the point of it?
Yeah. It's frustrating. It's very annoying.
You know that would be the biggest honor that USC has ever given, a jersey number retired to a non-Heisman winner?
Yeah.
Like, you could not honor that jersey more than doing that.
Right.
So if that's what they're looking for, if they're looking for honor for Junior Seau, then that's the solution. But otherwise, give it to anybody.
Not being used is not honoring Junior Seau.
No.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Retire it or give it to somebody else in his honor. Like, it ain't that hard.
Yeah.
It really ain't that hard. All right. Let's get a call from Marcelo, and then we'll rapid fire the rest of it.
Hello, Michael and Alicia. This is Marcelo from Portland, Oregon. I'm calling early before the game because something's been sticking in my craw for the last couple weeks and has been brought to the surface with your discussions about the V for Victory versus the Fight On labeling. And I don't have an opinion on that, but I need to put in a petition to eliminate the phrase fight out. It's terrible. You don't say fight out. Just say fight on. Just say fight on to say goodbye to somebody. Oh, this is blah, 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 blah. What a great game. Great passing. Blah, blah, blah. All right, I'm so excited for this team. Fight on. Hang up. Like, fight on and fight out. Like, we're not fighting out. We're fighting on always, okay? And I heard somebody on the rant line or the rave line the other day say fight out, and they didn't even say fight on. They just said fight out. This is not something that is acceptable. The phrase is fight on. And I'd love to hear your opinions. I'd love you to join me in this crusade to eliminate people saying fight out. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, as always, Marcelo. I agree with you, but I think it's important to recognize the etymology of fight out.
Yeah, I've got bad news for you, Marcelo. I am on the other side of this argument.
It's a bit.
It's literally a bit.
It comes from our pal Justin, a.k.a. Hokey P, top Trojan fan, long-time listener forever. He called in once and flubbed over his words and said fight out by mistake, right? Called in?
And I think it was him calling in and saying fight out and then called back and was like, sorry about that, and then you used the fight out. And then Dave in Orange County started saying fight out. And
yeah,
it just sort
as
of became
a callback to him.
Yeah. So I love it. It makes me happy every time I hear it. Do I want everybody to be saying fight out? No, not necessarily. But do I love to have at least one fight out from people who get the inside joke? Yes. Yeah. More fight outs to you.
I think it's a good rant line bit.
Yes.
Don't use it in real life.
No, I would never say fight out in real life.
Yeah, it's not a way to say fight, like a bi version of fight out is fight out instead of fight out. No, like that's dumb.
Yeah.
But as a bit, I think it's great for the rant line bit.
Yes.
Yeah,
now,
I think it works.
If fight out is spreading, if you guys are experiencing fight out in the wild, let us know, because that'll give proof to... to jiggle bag being a potential thing that eventually spreads.
People are mad and love jiggle bag. We got, I'm sorry, the guy who commented that says he turns off the podcast as soon as I say the word jiggle bag. I'm sorry. We'll see you next week, I guess.
Yeah.
But people are either like, oh, I love jiggle bag. I'm going to use that every time now. Like, I'm going to use it all the time. Or people are like, can you please stop? I got one tweet that was like, why do you say jiggle bag? It's so sexual. I'm like, it's sexual? Like, I think you're making it sexual by thinking it is sexual. Like, I don't.
It's a nonsense.
It's just a word. Yeah. Like, I don't know. Yeah. All right.
Jiggle bag for life.
Yeah. Rapid fire. The questions we got here on YouTube, and then we'll be out. Oscar says, help me understand why Michigan is still a favorite by 9.5 points. Great show as always. That was a preseason line.
Yeah, so here's my theory on this. That was a line that was a preseason line, and it hasn't changed because there's going to be a new opening line next week when it's the week of the game. I expect that line to be much smaller, if not completely flipped. If it is still 9.5, then I want to know what Vegas knows. That's all I want to know.
Yeah, we'll see. Berto says, where would you guys rank us in defenses in the Big Ten? I think it's a little early to truly know.
Way too small of a sample size. We know that Penn State's defense is consistently good over the years. We know that Ohio State's defense is effective, and we know that Oregon's defense is effective.
Michigan, obviously.
Michigan's defense is outstanding. Nebraska's defense looks...
Iowa.
Looks really good. Iowa, obviously. So it's possible USC's defense at this moment, from what we know, is still uncertain to be in the top 10, but that's literally in the top half.
Yeah.
But that's literally just because it is still too small of a sample size.
A top half Big Ten defense?
Is top
very
15
good.
Nationally.
Yeah, like it's very good. Yeah. Like, if you have a top 5 Big Ten defense, like, put SC in the playoff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Ron Murray says, how much preparation for Michigan do you think the coaches and the players will do this week? Should they watch their game against Arkansas State? Yeah, I think they'll probably end up, a lot of people end up watching the game together. I would imagine that they've done a lot of prep for Michigan. Off-field stuff, like the analysts and whatnot, have prepped for Michigan already.
Well, on the Victory podcast, Cody Kessler was talking about this, that there are guys on USC staff, some of the analysts will have been looking at Michigan tape since last December.
Yeah.
So, yes, they are fully prepared for that, and I would expect all of the install this week, all of the focus this week will be geared towards Michigan, even if it's not specifically like the Michigan game plan.
And we know Michigan has been watching SC games in the flesh since 2022. Yeah.
Just got to keep an eye out for spies.
Mari in the chat says, does anyone else think the aura of the lights being half off made for some great photos, almost like mood lighting. Yeah, you said before, while we were watching it, that you likened it to Moneyball.
So we were watching a video talking about like sports in film or baseball in film or whatever.
How they film sports scenes. Crowds and stuff like that.
Yeah, and there was a specific section about how like lighting is very important, and that one of the creative like everything in sports movies and stuff is about having everything be super authentic, except for like when you make a creative choice, which Moneyball did. Moneyball decided that they wanted to create that sort of atmospheric aura, and so basically they shot those scenes for Moneyball, all the baseball scenes, with like only one bank of light in the lights in the stadium on. Mm-hmm. And it created more of that mood. It created more of that sort
grainy.
Of graininess and all of that kind of stuff. And so it wasn't authentic in the slightest to the actual, like what it would have looked like on the field, because there would just, it would just be way more lit up, but it was a choice. So this was accidental, but it did create the same kind of thing where you do, it is mood lighting.
It also reminder of what the Coliseum used to look like a decade ago.
Yeah.
The Coliseum lights, I always thought sucked as a kid. Like, compared to, like, my dad would always talk about, like, SEC lights are great because you don't see any shadows and whatnot. And the Coliseum lights, for the longest time, you would see, like, two big X's.
Yes.
Because there were shadows. And they are better now. But they're, yeah, you watch a game at, like, Auburn and whatever, they're like, there's not a single shadow anywhere because it's so bright. AK Makayo says, didn't this D trend start with the bowl game, the rise of the defense? Yes, but I think that I think for all intents and purposes, I don't think you can count the Holiday Bowl as the uptick in defense. Yes, there was the placement of like the role of Taylor Mays in the Holiday Bowl, but like this is a new defensive step. Entz and Belk and Henderson, all those guys weren't here for the Holiday Bowl. And Lynn.
The Holiday Bowl was, to me, proof that the personnel wasn't necessarily the full problem.
Sure.
That the personnel went out there and fought hard in the Holiday Bowl, and you could sort of see the difference in how they approached that game. So it was sort of proof positive of that they weren't the problem.
Yeah.
But the coaching staff has now come in and shown that they can be wielded in a very, very, very effective way with the proper coaching, with the proper schematics, with the proper play calling.
And Dan Lynn was hired before the Holiday Bowl, but it's not like he had an impact.
Yeah, he wasn't coaching that.
Yeah. All right. HR Pickensaf says, what's the worst number in football?
It's got to be like 43
those are the numbers that I always make my kicker in Madden.
Yeah, the 40s. That's what's funny to me about like 42 and 43.
42
like,
is great.
Yeah, 41 is great.
43 is good.
44 is not 40, good.
No, 44 is great. I think 44 is a great baseball number.
Mm.
You know, Hank Aaron, Anthony Rizzo, great number that way. But like, yeah, like 48's not great.
No.
I was going to say 37. I'm sorry, Buck Allen, but like...
Yeah, 37 is not a good number. 37 is not very good. Imbalanced.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not a fan. Not a fan. Also, I do not like wide receivers having numbers in the 80s.
No, I think that's fine. That's wide receiver numbers.
Yeah, but it's like... If you're a wide receiver now and wearing a number in the 80s, it's like...
By choice. Going against the grain.
Oh, it's not by choice because
they all want the single digits. That's fair.
Yeah. Tim in LA says, jiggle back, one vote for me, one against from my wife. That's fair. That's fair. 50% I think works. All right. We'll be back. We've talked about it before in the CarCast, but here's the plan. We're going to have some weird scheduling stuff with some family events stuff happening next week. So, we will be back with another live show next Monday, September 16th, will be our Michigan preview episode. The bye week kind of works out nicely here. Michigan preview next Monday, not Wednesday, but Monday. If you're listening to audio only later this week, we'll throw up the Reggie Bush interview that Alicia had. If you watch on YouTube, it's already there. It's already on YouTube. You can watch it now. But for the audio only listeners, we'll put that up later this week as well. And I think we're going to start trying to do some more YouTube content in general. So keep an eye out for that. Make sure you're subscribed on YouTube and like everything that helps grow the show as well. Marcello says, jiggle bag better than fight out. Just don't overuse it. That's fair. That's fair.
You just start saying swizzle borf. So.
Yeah. Or tattle bunked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tattle bunked's good.
Yeah. The key is you take two words and you just jam them together. Make it a verb. Yeah.
Two words where the second word is verb sort of coded.
Yeah.
And the first word is like a little gibberish-y. Adjective, yeah. Gibberish adjective coded, and yeah, sticking together.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like noodle knifed. You got noodle knifed. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. All right. We'll see you next time. Until then, say, got a final word? We don't do final words anymore.
We don't do final words anymore. The final word is.
It's right there on a platter. Come on. Hit it.
Jiggle back.
It was fight out. You're supposed to say fight out.
That's two words. That's two.
Whatever. All right. We'll see you next time.
Fight out.
See ya.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.